ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We're going to go ahead a little bit to texts 27 and 28 of this chapter. Krishna is walking along the public road in this verse. The poetry of the Bhagavatam is becoming pretty spectacular. The previous chapter described the residents of Hastinapur appreciating so much how fortunate were the residents of Dwarka. It wasn't the grass is greener kind of thing. Gee, I wish I was in Dwarka instead of Hastinapur. It wasn't envious. Not at all. They were catching a glimpse of Krishna as he was leaving Hastinapur and thinking, how fortunate are the residents of Dwarka because they're always seeing the beautiful form of Krishna, drinking that beauty to their satisfaction. And in this chapter, it's describing their seeing Krishna and how filled their hearts became just by seeing Krishna. Because seeing Krishna is not like seeing some mundane object. Like we discussed this morning about the law of satiation, after a certain point of time you can only eat so much. Then you say, I'm full, no more. I can only drink so much after a certain amount of taking water. That's it, I no more. There's a satiation point. Any material activity, you can only sleep so much. You can only do anything in the material world so much, and then it's too much. But as far as Krishna is concerned, he's not material. And as many times as the residents of Dwarka had seen Krishna, it was like seeing Krishna anew for the first time. Like chanting the Maha Mantra. How many times can you sing Hare Krishna? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And after some time, become satiated? No, because it's not material. And that's not the same with some mundane sound or song. After a certain time, that's it. I need another one. So the idea is Krishna's form is all spiritual, and that experience of seeing the form of Krishna, there's one verse, it's like Didi Darshan, you know, the arms of Krishna. First it starts with the chest of Krishna is the abode of the goddess of fortune. The moon-like face is the drinking vessel for the eyes which hanker after all that is beautiful. Very nice. Moon-like face is like the drinking vessel for the eyes which hanker after all that is beautiful. His arms are the resting places for the administrative demigods, and his lotus feet are the refuge of pure devotees who never talk or sing of any other subject except his lordship. So the body of the Lord in his different parts of the limbs of the Lord, it's a festival. And Prabhupada describes when there are festivals, Janmashtami, people come to see the form of the Lord. It's the centerpiece of the festival. There's so many other things, but that's the centerpiece, darshan of the... At our Juhu temple, I forget what the number is on Janmashtami, how many people come for Janmashtami? Some huge number. Does anybody know that number? Something outrageous, like hundreds of thousands of people. They just have a line of people that go down 3 blocks. They stand in line for hours just to file by the deity and then file out. Hundreds of thousands of people just have darshan of Radha Rasa Bihari on Janmashtami Day. And here's the residents of Dwarka, and that same Krishna is walking down the road. Their eyes are having a grand festival. Drinking vessels for seeing all that is beautiful. And Krishna is the repose, the essence of all that is beautiful. All that is beautiful comes from him, so he is all beautiful. The essence of everything is the Supreme Lord, therefore he is called Saram. And those who sing and talk about him are Sarangas. Just by speaking about Krishna, one becomes a Anga of the Sara, of the essence of everything. Very nice. Just make our speaking about Krishna. And our describing about Krishna, and our singing about Krishna, and we become Sarangas. The limbs of the essence of everything. I'll just read this. Very nice. This section is poetic, so it's very fitting that Prabhupada has taken a very nice prayer by Rupa Goswami, where he's praying to the Lord, directing his mind, his bee-like mind, to the honey-like lotus feet. Because the lotus attracts bees who want to come for the pollen. Let my mind be like the bee and your lotus feet like the pollen to come and drink the nectar. Because there's other limbs of the body, but Rupa Goswami is just interested in the lotus feet. Because of his humility. The devotees are satisfied with being placed at the lotus feet of the Lord and have no ambition to see his all-beautiful face or aspire for the protection of the strong arms of the Lord. They are humble by nature. And the Lord is always leaning towards such humble devotees. It's all so poetic. But here's Rupa Goswami's. And if you think, not like get distracted by, but if this, the thought of this nice prayer enters in your mind while chanting the holy name, it's very thrilling. It's very purifying. The inclination of the mind toward Krishna while chanting his holy name or while seeing his beautiful form. O my Lord Krishna, I beg to offer my prayers unto you. My mind is like the bee, and it is after some honey. Kindly therefore give my bee mind, or bee-like mind, a place at your lotus feet, which are the resources for all transcendental honey. I know that even big demigods like Brahma do not see the rays of the nails of your lotus feet. Even though they are engaged in deep meditation for years together, like the most qualified people, they don't have this access still. O infallible one, my ambition is such. For you are very merciful to your surrendered devotees. O Madhava. Madhava indicates the husband of the goddess of fortune. So the goddess of fortune is at the feet of the Lord. So I'm the servant of the goddess of fortune. Accept me as your as her servant. And allow me to be at your lotus feet. O Madhava. I know also that I have no genuine devotion for your lotus feet. Of course he does. It's just his expression of humility. But you won't find that quality in me. Still, because your lordship is inconceivably powerful, you can do what is impossible to be done. Expressions of faith and recognizing, invoking the compassionate nature of the Lord. Your lotus feet can deride even the nectar of the heavenly kingdom. And therefore I am very much attracted by them, O Supreme Eternal. Please, therefore, let my mind be fixed at your lotus feet, so that eternally I may be able to relish the taste of your transcendental service. Beautiful. So you take this same poem and exchange lotus feet with O Holy Name. We had just a little sharing with you that I conducted a japa retreat in our farm in mid-Pennsylvania in Gitanagari. It was very nice. And one of the sessions was taking from the teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur how to, one of the favorite types of questions, the how-to questions, how to go more deeply into the chanting of Krishna's holy name. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave three steps. And the first of them was to meditate on the meaning of the mantra. So what's the meaning of the mantra when we're chanting Hare Krishna? The meaning is we're appealing to Radha in the form of Hara to give us the opportunity to serve, which is what Rupa Goswami is doing here. He's not invoking Radha's name or Hara, but he's invoking the mercy, that's Radha, the mercy of the Lord to enter into the realm of his devotional service. And so the way that we did this exercise, while chanting, we had everybody chant in unison, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare. And while they were chanting, I said, I'll continue chanting, and I'm going to invoke this phrase of inviting Krishna, pleading with Krishna to accept us in his service. Because that's what the meaning of the Maha Mantra is. So it was very short. O Lord, please accept me. So when chanting, try it tomorrow morning. With feeling. With feeling. O Lord, please accept me. If you can remember the poetry of Rupa Goswami, that embellishes it, but maybe nice just to keep the essence. Oh Lord, please accept me. Now, He's accepting us. He's forever inviting us, pleading with us, begging, please come. And we're stubborn like mules. No. Maybe. I'm busy. I have many things to do later. And so on. I've got my conditions. We have so many things. But if from our side, we know what He is from His side, He's compassionate and loving. So we're out to lunch. It was a long lunch. Haven't come back. There's spiders and cobwebs and rats and everything all over the shop because we're out to lunch. If we're calling to Krishna, please accept me. It's very powerful. You can go more deeply into the holy name. You get entrance, more complete experience of the mercy of the holy name, the presence of the holy name, just by opening the heart and calling with feeling. Try it. And having that feeling, as Rupa Goswami's prayer is presenting, one doesn't want anything else. From our side, it doesn't. So, it means the mood of service. And in that mood of service, as that mood of service matures in intimacy, then it becomes friendship. And friendship with the stage of feeling so much care and friendship for another, the one wants to protect the other. So like protection and maintenance, the bhava of parental affection, and in its most complete form, and conjugal affection. So the gopis are hankering for that embrace of Krishna, but it's not in the way that today's feature of a man or a woman hankering for the embrace of another. It's not the same. It's for Krishna's happiness, for Krishna's service, not for my enjoyment. It's unknown. It's not part of the mood of service. And the gopis are the best of all servants. It's not of this world. The Bhagavatam describes when they prepare themselves to meet Krishna, they're dressing themselves and placing ornaments, and they're not thinking, oh, I'm going to charm Krishna, I'll capture Krishna because I'll be so beautiful. It's for Krishna, let Krishna's pleasure increase. It's a different meditation altogether. It's a very matured stage of service. So let's start with the beginning position of service. Please accept me. In the mood of wanting to serve, then that taste of wanting to serve, one isn't hankering for anything else. Certainly not anything material. And the stages of maturing of one's devotion will happen naturally. So, the residents of Dwarka are on that platform of devotional service. Further, poetry of the Bhagavatam is describing how they saw him moving along the road. As the Lord passed along the public road of Dwarka, His head was protected from the sunshine by a white umbrella. White feathered fans moved in semicircles, and showers of flowers fell upon the road. His yellow garments and garlands of flowers made it appear as if a dark cloud were surrounded simultaneously by sun, moon, lightning, and rainbows. So beautiful. We try to picture such a thing. Prabhupada explains, you can't picture such a thing because such a thing doesn't exist. When there's sun, where's the moonlight? You can't see the sunlight and moonlight at the same time. But they were seeing the sunlight and the moonlight at the same time. If there's clouds in the sky and a rainbow, there's no manifestation of lightning. Because the lightning would change, the rainbow would disappear. But all these opposites that can't simultaneously exist, simultaneously existed. Because of Krishna's inconceivable potency, that which is not ordinarily possible becomes possible. Just like Rupa Goswami's prayer. I have no qualification. I know. I have no qualification. Still, I'm desiring. And my desire is not pure and strong. Still I'm desiring. Because I know that you're all powerful and you're all merciful and you can make anything happen. And please make it happen. What is it that I'm asking? Just give me a place at your lotus feet. So that a little taste for your devotional service. Now this sounds like someone that has taste. Like, give me more. He's painting himself or portraying himself in the position of having no taste. And I want some taste. That's the humility of a Vaishnava. What an acharya, great acharya teaching us how, you know, like, how do I become more humble? Associate with Rupa Goswami, you become more humble. He teaches the way of becoming humble in a very deep sense. So what are these features? This white umbrella over his head was like the sun. And the moon was like the white feathers. It doesn't say chamara, it's white feathered fan, like a peacock fan, but there's white feathers also, and making a fan of white feathers. So they were fanning him with a fan of white feathers. It was like the moon, moving in semicircles. And the showers of flowers were like stars. And his garments of yellow color were like flashing lightning. And the dark cloud, we know who the dark cloud was. Krishna! As the cloud is moving, here comes the lightning, here comes the stars, here comes the moon, here comes the sun. And they move wherever he goes. Festival for the eyes. Things that Prabhupada explains, because Krishna is transcendental, you can't imagine what that experience is like. And you can't even describe properly that experience except through metaphor. And even the metaphor is like something you can't even experience. Right? One of the 26 qualities of a devotee is the devotee is kavi or poetic. Because to describe Krishna, you have to use poetry. because you can't describe him. He's indescribable, except saying, like this. So one of the ornaments, the alankar of poetry, is metaphor and simile, like this. So in Rupa Goswami's writings, there are many fantastic metaphors. Very beautiful, like the swan. Well, the great devotees, they're not swans. They're swan-like. And what's the feature of the swan? The swan knows how to take a mixture of milk and water and just take the milk. So the devotees are swan-like. And what else about the swans? They like to be in beautiful lakes where it's clear water and lotuses and not garbage dumps where the crows go. You don't find swans in the garbage dumps. You don't find crows in the clear lakes with lotuses. So the devotees similarly like where things are very pure, very clean, very pristine, very calm, very peaceful. Devotees like, they're attracted to such places. And where the glorification of Krishna, even in a big metropolitan city and growing like crazy and getting dirtier and crazier every day, still the swan-like devotees take the nectar of Krishna in the midst of all of that turmoil. And all of you have your lives are all over the place in the city, and you come together in the evening to capture the nectar of Krishna Katha. So becoming swan-like. So what to speak of Krishna? And how what's it like to see Krishna entering into Dwarka? So it's through poetry. The situated crater at the time of his passing on the roads of Dwarka was beautiful and could not be compared to anything besides the description of natural phenomena. So Vyas describes in that way. Now he's coming off the road into the palaces, and he's already been met by Vasudev, and so now he's going to meet Devaki and the other queens in the palace. After entering the house of his father, he was embraced by the mother's present, and the Lord offered obeisances unto them by placing his head at their feet. He's the Supreme Lord. He's the master of everything, and they know it. And here he's coming and placing his head at their feet. Such expression of submission and humility, just as Ram before his mother and stepmothers. In the purport, it explains that Vasudev had 18 wives. That's a lot of wives, those of you that have one. 17 more? And chief of them was Devaki. Devaki was the daughter of Devaka. And Devaka and Ugrasena were brothers. And they were from the other side. The Shurasena side is Krishna's side, where Vasudev was in the line of Shurasena, and above him Yadu. On the other side, Devaka. And so Devaki had six other sisters. On the marriage day of Devaki, Vasudev actually married seven daughters at the same time, chief of whom was Devaki. And it's when the voice came, There were 6 other sisters that watched that scene. So that's just 7. Then there's 11 more. But Devaki was chief, not principal queen. She was principal because of her pure devotion. Because of her pure devotion, she was the mother of Krishna. Being the mother of Krishna, naturally she was chief amongst them all. One of her sisters, one of the 6 sisters, was Rohini. Rohini and Devaki were sisters. And when Kamsa imprisoned Vasudeva and Devaki and imprisoned his own father, Ugrasena, many of the members of the royal family, they fled for their lives, but some remained just to stay in the situation of the royal family and to take care of the royal affairs. Vasudeva, some of the wives of Vasudeva remained with him. When Rohini was pregnant, she was sent by Vasudeva to go stay with his dear friend Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda so that she would be safe from the hand of wicked Kamsa. But then, by the arrangement of Krishna through Yogamaya, the child in the womb of Devaki was transferred to the womb of Rohini and was born as Balaram. So Balaram's father is Vasudeva, and Krishna's father is Vasudeva, and so they're brothers, although they have different mothers, because Vasudeva had many queens. They were literally brothers. Unlike with Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were different fathers and different mothers, and they were born in different places. But they're transcendental brothers, and they were associating with one another as brothers, and they were treated by others as brothers. Because Lord Nityananda knew no one but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada explains that there, in Vedic culture, there are 7 mothers. Who would like to list all 7 mothers? Who would like to list one of those 7 mothers? Yes. Go ahead. Cow. One's real mother, biological mother. Wife of the spiritual master. Wife of the king or the queen. That's 4. Mother Earth. Correct. Wife of a Brahmana. This tree is seen as mother. The nurse in Vedic culture, when the child was first born, not only the mother of the child, but nurses of the child would take care of the child, and they were accepted as mother. A motherly role. 7. So now here we have stepmothers. So do they count or they're not counting? They count. And the reason Prabhupada gives is because the father is counted as the spiritual master. So the wife of the spiritual master is the mother. So one of the 7. So Krishna treated the stepmothers, that's, 17 other mothers, as good as his mother, Devaki. And they, in turn, treated Krishna as their own son. So we have this culture in the Vedas that the boys in school, they're taught to see everyone as mother. And then, in turn, the mothers should see each of the boys as their son. They may have their own son. They may not have their own son. They may have their daughter. They may not have their daughter, but they see the daughter and the son as their own daughter and their own son. And that's culture. You have specific responsibility for your own children, but in a spiritual community, the training of the children is not complete if the parents aren't seeing the adults, are not seeing the children as their sons and daughters. So with great affection and care, like your son or your daughter, you should extend. At least one should extend affection in that way. The specific care is one's mother and father. And then the training is the children are to see the father as spiritual master and the mother and other mothers as mother. Prabhupada concludes, Lord Krishna, the Lord of the universe, plays the part of an ideal son just to teach others how to treat their stepmothers, or how to treat others who are in the role of mother with very much respect and affection. And in turn, what did the mothers do? After embracing their sons, they sat him on their laps. Krishna is this big, he just come back from the Kurukshetra battle and powerful, killed so many demons, and they sit him on their lap because that's their mothers. They have affection of mother. Due to pure affection, milk sprang from their breasts. They were overwhelmed with delight, and the tears from their eyes wetted the Lord. It wasn't, you know, formal greeting. It was filled with love and affection. Transcendental. Prabhupada even poetically concludes in the purport. When Lord Krishna was at Vrindavan, even the cows would become moistened by affection towards him. And he would draw milk from the nipples of every affectionate living being, not just the cows. So what to speak of the stepmothers who are already as good as his own mother? So a phrase that was used earlier in this section is appropriate for each individual. Krishna engaged in dealings. They would approach him in a proper way, or in an appropriate way, and he would reciprocate with them. Just appropriate to their mood. Yatha vidhi, as appropriate. So just like when Krishna was leaving Hastinapur, Yudhisthira approached. Krishna placed his head at Yudhisthira's feet. Yudhisthira understood Krishna as the personality of Godhead. So what's he doing putting his head at my feet? But he didn't say, no, you can't do that. Because he understood Krishna's mood. And Krishna was teaching others by example. Whoever you may be, you follow etiquette. And Arjuna and Bhima, because they were of age equal, so they embraced. And Nakula and Sahadev, they came before Krishna and placed their head at his feet and he lifted them up and embraced them. So same, when Vasudev came to receive Krishna, Krishna placed his head at his feet, and Vasudev lifted Krishna and embraced him. My son. What transcendental thrill Vasudev must have felt just by touching the body of Krishna. My son, filled with paternal affection. So the mothers, filled with maternal affection, and whatever maternal affection any mothers here might feel for their children, we can't even imagine. Millions and millions and billions of times, and still not equal to the affection of the pure devotees in Vatsalya Rasa toward Krishna as their son. And because their minds were so filled with transcendental feeling, their bodies also became transformed in ecstatic expressions of motherly affection. Because when the object becomes Krishna, then that's what happens. Like in the Brahma Mohan Leela, when Krishna manifested himself as cowherds, boys, and calves, exactly the verse describes not only the boys, but all of their paraphernalia. You know, the buffalo horn, and their flute, and their clothing, and their lunch pails. Was exactly the same. Because why not? Krishna manifested it the first time, why he can't manifest it a second time? Exactly. He doesn't need a factory. He's got this exactly. Just boom. There they are. And so much in the likeness of their own sons that the mothers couldn't recognize it wasn't their own sons, because they looked exactly like their sons. And when they embraced their sons who had come back from the pasturing ground, they found, much to their surprise, that their affection for their son was now like their affection for Krishna. Because they loved Krishna more than their own sons. Oh, mothers, is such a thing possible? With Krishna, it's possible. And they became bewildered. And one day when they were by the side of Govardhan Hill, the cowherd boys were taking the calves, and the cows were up on the hill, and the cows saw their calves, and they started running. You ever seen a cow run? They don't run usually. When they run, it's really hilarious. Boom, 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 boom. Their whole body is... So the men were running down the hill of Govardhan. Stop! Stop! Angry. When they got to the bottom of the hill, they saw their own boys. They forgot their anger. They just embraced their sons. Like they were embracing Krishna. Krishna was fulfilling their desire that they would have as their own son Krishna. So they had Krishna as their own son, literally. And the cows that had such affection, they wanted Krishna as their son. And so it was. Krishna became the calf. So the calves were drinking from the cows, and the men were embracing their sons, and Krishna is fulfilling the desires of all the residents of Braja by wonderful Leela. When Krishna becomes the object of our affection, then all of the inconsistencies and limitations and inebrieties and all those things, it's gone, and the heart's desire is fulfilled in an inconceivable way. And Krishna can make that happen going back to Rupa Goswami's prayer, even we have no attraction. If we approach him in this humble, petitioning mood, please accept me. I have no qualification. Great devotees that have qualification can't get access, and I'm shameless, I'm asking anyway. Described in Nectar of Devotion as hope against hope. Still I have the hope, because you're merciful and you're all powerful. Please accept me in your service. Then there's some taste. And that taste is so attractive. The material attractions just become insignificant. And this is the poetry of the Bhagavatam is helping us to get there. Compliments of Srila Vyasadeva. Okay, so any comments or questions? Yes? Chanting. Meaning. Meaning is, please engage me in your service. Do lesson one first. Because I can give it to you, take it down in your notes, and what are you going to do with it? Practice in tomorrow's morning's japa. You give a little testimonial of what that experience was like, and I'll tell you number two. Let's go for application, not just information. Transformation, not just information. Tomorrow morning. I know what they are, but I don't want to just put information in the information processor. Anything? Yes. Yeah. Yes, of course there's responsibility to your own children. Yes, yes. That's the idea. You don't give the same, you don't, you know, dress them and put them in the give them their bath and feed them every morning, every evening, as you do with your, or were doing with your children when they were younger. But affection. They should be treated with that kind of affection. And they should feel happy to receive that effect, come to your home and be fed nicely, and as long as it doesn't interfere with the other programs. Treated like that, yeah. And then when the parents, say if your children have such affection for some other parents, it's not like, oh, now that affection for us as their real parents is going to be less, diminished in some way. No, it just means that there's more fullness of love and affection in the life of your child. And that will only increase their sense of affection and appreciation for mother and father. That's the way of the network of loving relationships. As that network of loving relationships expands, then one learns the ways of loving exchange. It becomes the way of life instead of feeling lonely in this world. Yes.
Even in a community like this, the children will have
Well, what does a mother do? You know, it's not rocket science. Mothers are affectionate. When a child needs some comfort, they go to the mother. When they're hungry, they go to the mother. When they want some affection, they go to their mother. And the mothers, the ladies of the community, should be supplying. Natural. Affection. And it should, so the notion here is something very personal. That's the emphasis. A personal exchange between the ladies and the children. The idea is when the children grow up, if that consciousness has developed nicely, that's how they'll see all women, as mothers, not as objects to be enjoyed, potentially, but as mothers to be respected. So these two elements, mainly respect and personal dealings. It takes away in the home, the mother is dealing with the child like a lot, like all the time. And so there can very easily be the familiarity factor where the child doesn't respond nicely to the mother because of familiarity. So if there are many mothers, then it reduces that to a degree. The dimension of respect and personal attention and affection becomes more of a way of life, less just familiarity. There's only one that gives me what I need, and so I've learned this program. I just throw a tantrum and I get what I want. I get rewarded for throwing tantrums. Nice question. Anyone else? Yes. Yes. By the mood of humility and appealing to the Lord, one is invoking the Lord's compassionate feature. Yes. He is compassionate. So it's not like he becomes more compassionate. It's rather opening our heart to his compassion. Invoking his compassionate nature is more what's going on in our heart than what's going on his side. The sun is always shining. The Lord is always compassionate. It's his nature. So approaching in a humble mood and invoking that compassionate dimension or aspect of him, it's opening our heart to receive that compassion. Say it again. The duck, one that quacks the loudest. Something like that. Not exactly, but something like that. That has to do with eagerness. The quacking the loudest is eagerness. This other, the emphasis is on a prayerful mood, which is perhaps a manifestation of eagerness, but it's a particular way. In a mood of humility, praying for the mercy of the Lord. In the mercy of the Lord in the form of accessing His service. So, similar but different. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.